Welcome to the Project Zion podcast. This podcast explores the unique spiritual and theological gifts Community of Christ offers for today's world.
Hello, and welcome to the Project Zion podcast. I'm your host, Carla Long, and today I am here with a dear friend, Daniel Harmon, and he's going to tell us about his new role that he has taken working for the church. But before we jump into that, hi, Daniel.
Hey, Carla.
I'm so glad to have you here. Thank you so much for being on the podcast. And before we really jump into the nitty-gritty of your job, can you tell us a little bit about yourself?
Yes, I'd be happy to. You already shared my name, which is wonderful. It's Daniel Harmon. I currently live in Independence, Missouri, but about a year ago, my wife Emily and I moved here from Southern California, where I served in a variety of roles for the church. I was a youth minister, a pastor, a mission center financial officer. So Carla, you and I connect in that way as well. But now I am working at the temple, and I can talk more in a moment about my role. My wife, Emily, is working at Rockhurst University as a campus minister. We're preparing to welcome our first child into the world in May, which is really exciting as we prepare to be parents for the first time. And then just in terms of myself and my hobbies and the things that I'm passionate about, I love music and songwriting. I love coffee. I love running, hiking, camping. Ministerially, I have a lot of passion and a sense of personal calling around discernment in community and what that looks like to really have a spiritually curious posture together. And then also faith-rooted organizing as a full-time pastor. That was something I spent a lot of time doing, something I learned a lot about as a model for action and for making a just difference in the community. So that's just a little bit about me.
You know, Daniel, you probably know this, but it might've been President Veazey who said this, but he did say that being a pastor is the hardest job in the whole church. And since I'm a pastor now too, and I don't know if you agree with him, but I certainly agree with him now.
Yeah. Well, and I'll say something and it is not intended to diminish the quality of ministry that is offered in other roles in the church. But when you're a pastor, there's a whole other level of accountability because in a different way, you are sharing in the on-the-ground contextual work of leadership and community. So when you say to a community, like a congregation, I think this needs to happen and let's have a conversation about how this happens. You know, you don't go to lunch, get in your car and drive away, you are there with them as they try to engage in that work. So it means that you yourself are seeking to understand the same way that that community is, you know, how do we live out these words? How do we find ways to actually enact the conversations we're having and the questions we're asking? And like I said, there's a different level of accountability, but also excitement because it's very life-giving to actually tangibly be part of those things that are happening.
Oh, you said it so well. Yes, you talked. I really appreciated how you said that. Oh, and it makes me more excited about what you're going to say in the podcast. So let's jump in. So you gave us a little bit of a teaser about your new role at the temple. Can you tell us what your job title is and tell us what you do there?
Yes, I'll tease it out a little bit further. So my role, I was hired with the title of Spirituality and Peace Center Coordinator with this vision and task of discerning and forming a new spirituality and peace center housed at the Community of Christ Temple here in Independence. And my role title is kind of in flux now, but if somebody were to walk off the street and say, hey, what do you do? I would say, well, I am the ministry coordinator for the Center for Living Water, the spirituality center that is at the temple. And that will probably come to some fuller form in the near future. But do you want me to say a little bit about what I'm doing in my role as well, or for now just share the name of the role?
No, tell us a little bit more about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So like I said, a huge component of this is not just, so the Spirituality Center, the Center for Living Water, it didn't exist. So part of the work has been discerning a name for the Spirituality Center, giving some fuller identity to the kind of ministries that will emerge from this center, and really understanding, you know, how is the temple as a sacred space called to connect to the local community, but also how is it called to fulfill its own prophetic promise to be really this space of calling and purpose and peace for the wider church. And so I've been able to really be part of an exciting process of imagining, you know, what are some new pathways to ministry that we might offer to the local church and to the local community. And one thing that is really exciting to me about that is I have for years now in my roles heard this language of new expressions. It's a phrase, it's one of those phrases that has become common in the church, but I would hear about new expressions, but I never felt like there were a lot of tangible examples to point to of what that would look like, at least outside of the scope of congregational life. Lots of congregations are experimenting and risking new things, you know, embodying the words of the mission prayer, but I haven't, outside of the scope of congregational life, like I said, in Community of Christ, seen a lot of examples of what does it look like for us to imagine new forms of community, new expressions of making connection between the holy and the impulses of our neighborhoods. And so in this work, we've been able to start imagining what it might look like outside of the scope of a congregation to actually form some new expressions of community. And some of the things that have emerged at this point, you know, we've been forming this community of musicians who, influenced by the Taizé community in France, which is this contemplative musical community that writes original songs and offers this form of worship that is rooted in prayer and practice and music and sharing. We've been creating some of our own expressions of that. You know, we did an experience on the International Day of Nonviolence. I partnered with Joey Williams and Bryce Veazey and the Council of 12 and a lot of other gifted people back in October to create that experience. We've been exploring new forms of ministry with the Labyrinth, the Prayer for Peace, different types of spiritual practice and formation groups, not only with traditional spiritual practices like centering prayer, but also thinking about writing groups and connecting different forms of visual arts and covenant communities. And then also just saying, you know, what are some of the other more diverse, varied entry points that would be potential pathways to connection and ministry in the community? Because I think every person who we encounter has a different level of comfort with religious experience. And some people might say, you know, I come from a Christian background and I want a Christian experience. And there may be a more Community of Christ-centric experience that connects well to that experience. But for somebody who simply feels this abstract sense of yearning for community might connect better with like a yoga session or a community run club or a peace camp experience for their kids. And so we're really in this posture of seeking to understand, you know, what are some of those ways that we can connect to the community? What are some of the unique expressions and experiments that we can begin to form that will inform us as we continue to create things that are in response to the impulses of the local community? So some of that is concrete, some of it is abstract, but to me, all of it is exciting as we're imagining some of the new ways that we can express the church and hopefully create some examples that other people can see that can be helpful as they engage in their own practices of prophetic imagination.
That all sounds fascinating, Daniel. And wow, you've been busy, really busy.
Well, yeah.
So let me just make sure I understand. A lot of the stuff that you're doing now is really for the local people in Independence, the people that are close to the temple, the people that can work around the temple, or are they things that other people can get involved with who live outside of Independence?
Well, the original vision really was centered on, you know, specifically local contextual ministry. And even in my position description and in just some of the early formative conversations, there was always this impulse of wanting to ask, you know, how though does this connect to the larger church, to Community of Christ? Because it is a local distinct expression. And even though I'm at headquarters, I'm technically in a field position, even though it's at international headquarters, which is really interesting. But since it is housed at the temple, there's always this question of, you know, how do the things that happen at the temple give voice to the wider church and what we are collectively experiencing? And that's been actually kind of a unique gift of the pandemic, is that most of our early ministries have had to take place online. We've done some things in person, like we've been hosting an in-person Prayer for Peace and Labyrinth Walk every Tuesday and Thursday at the temple on the World Plaza, which has been interesting given the current winter weather. In Missouri, it was, I think it was 19 degrees yesterday when Joey and Andrea from Italy helped lead the Prayer for Peace. But we also did a community labyrinth walk in October, and that was an in-person experience. But everything else we've done, some of these Taizé experiences, the practice series at Advent, has all been online. And I think that those are experiences that, had conditions been different, you know, if we hadn't been in the state of a pandemic, we would have experimented with in person. And that would have been vibrant and exciting in different ways. But I think one of the really cool things about doing it all online first means that the entire church, at least those who are connected in ways online through social media or through the church website, have been able to have access to these practices and to these unique worship gatherings that we have been creating. And so it means that there's this level of exposure for this early formative work that we're doing that is present in the wider church that probably would not have been there if we had started in ways that we had originally intended. And so from my perspective, even though that's not the way we imagine things, it has kind of blessed our experiences and who they are able to reach. And I think it will also impact the way we think about future offerings, you know, what is online and what is in person? Are there things that are in person that we can intentionally stream and craft in new, unique ways that feel like they are inclusive to both an in-person and an online community, so we can reach a more diverse audience? And so those are all questions that we continue to hold and ask. But back to the original question, I think that the hope is that, yes, we are reaching out to and connecting with our local community, and specifically with those who maybe fall onto the margins of the church, either within it or outside of the church, who never have had any affiliation with the church at all. But that we are also hoping that we can offer some experiences that are life-giving and inspiring and renewing for current church members and leaders.
You know, to your point about it being one of the blessings of the pandemic, I totally agree. Like, would we even be looking at this, looking at streaming things as much as we have been, if not for the pandemic? And I think no. I know in Salt Lake City, it's been a blessing for people who they find it difficult to walk through the doors of a church that's not their own. It's very easy to click on a link and listen in. And so it's not so scary when you actually do walk through those doors. And so I think it's something that we're going to have to consider pretty much every single time we do a worship service. I think we'll need to consider everyone in the church, whether or not it could be streamed or not. So I appreciate that you're doing that, even though your job description says this is for a local community. I do want to talk a little bit about that Advent service you put on. I know you talked about the International Day of Peace one. I think that's what you said.
International Day of Nonviolence.
Nonviolence. Okay.
The UN has many different exciting holidays.
Well, that is exciting.
Yeah.
Always good to keep it in the forefront.
Mm-hmm.
So I just remember on that Advent service, I knew it was happening, but life in my house with a one-year-old and a three-year-old is usually quite loud and quite chaotic and crazy. And I remembered when the Advent service was about 15 minutes into it that I really wanted to be a part of it. And Daniel, I'm not kidding. When I turned on the Advent service and we turned it on our TV upstairs and you were all singing in this quiet, beautiful way, and the lighting was just perfect in the chapel, it was just getting darker and darker. My kids, my one-year-old and my three-year-old, just stopped. And probably for, I'm not kidding, 45 seconds, which is a long time when you're one and three, they were completely present with you in that worship service. And it was such a moment for me as well. And so I don't know if you got to watch that Advent service, but it was something very, very special. And I'm not really, I don't usually love online worship. I'm an extrovert, so I really need people around. But that touched me in such a way that I will remember, I think, forever. Can you talk a little bit, A, about that service? And B, are you going to have other services like that in the future?
Oh man, I'm so glad to hear that it resonated and that you got 45 seconds of quiet with a 1 and a 3-year-old. I mean, if nothing else, we accomplished that. So that's pretty exciting. So the music, I mean, the whole music component is really interesting and it's been really important. You know, we were just talking about the blessings of the pandemic, but I'm just speaking from my own personal experience, and I'm not as extroverted as you, but I also have struggled with the duration under, you know, that we have had to endure online worship. You know, it's like how long can you do that and still make it feel like it's fresh and vibrant? And I know some people who continue to participate in online worship and it doesn't lose its value and connection. You know, they don't burn out on it, and that's wonderful. And that's why that's part of the reason that the continuation of online ministry is so important. But, you know, I think I had begun to reach a point where the pandemic was feeling like a spiritually dry time in my personal life. And sometimes when we linger in feelings of despair and uncertainty about the future, it can be a little bit more difficult for us to feel like we can access God's presence. But what was interesting for me is that in this time of real uncertainty and this time of asking some of these deeper questions about the church and about my own ministry, that I found this deep source of musical inspiration. And a lot of the songs in the service on December 19th for Advent were original songs that I've written. And those songs were all written in the midst of the pandemic. You know, I've been writing these Taizé style songs, and they're really raw and authentic because they're expressions of my own yearning in the midst of the spiritual valleys of my life. And for this service back in December, and the theme was Holy Night, a musical journey through darkness, the whole experience really felt like a magnet to the other musicians who I reached out to and who became involved in that experience. And I think part of this was there was this opportunity to create something that felt like it was unique and significant. I think that their own longings and callings were able to be expressed in that offering. But I think too that the message of the experience, the invitation to encounter Holy Presence in the darkness and just the mood of it that was a little more somber and reflective was really resonating with the experience that even the leaders of that experience were having. So I think that when some of these newer expressions of ministry tap into the deep longings and the giftedness of our communities, while also paying attention to the holy invitation and the present conditions of the world, there's something tremendously life-giving and inspiring that can happen. And that was really my experience with what we were able to create in December. And so to answer your second question, more of that is coming. And those same musicians who participated in that experience are really beginning to form and become cohesive as a unit in reflecting together on, you know, what is the next iteration of this look like? And we've been disrupted again because, you know, we met together and we were all super careful about rehearsals. You know, we wore masks when we weren't playing, and, you know, everyone, you know, has taken a lot of extra safety precautions. Some people in that group are even medical professionals, but we've reached this point yet again with, you know, I'm not sure when this podcast will air, but right now we're kind of at the height of the surge of the Omicron variant. And in my mind, as we were closing that experience for Advent, I thought after the Christmas holiday, we would be preparing to rehearse again and actually begin practicing for some local experiences for Lent. And so we're not going to be able to do that, and we haven't been rehearsing together, but we are preparing to lead an Ash Wednesday service that will be in very similar format to the Advent service that we hosted. Instead of coming together and rehearsing, I'm going to just record a session of myself playing and then send that to them. And they're going to rehearse and practice along with just a recording of me. And then we're going to record all of ourselves and stitch that together. And so that will be something that will be offered as part of the Lenten journey. We'll also have a practice series that accompanies that for all 6 weeks of Lent. And then, of course, in just being aware of whatever might happen with the pandemic, we are planning to continue to have future expressions like that. And in our minds, as we think about what the future of that looks like, you know, we're hoping that we'll be able to host some things like that in person and bring in the local community to participate and sing with us. Because that's one of the most beautiful, powerful things about Taizai or other chant style music is when the community sings it together. And then the community singing is really what is leading the music, and the band or the group that's leading the music almost becomes secondary to just the natural flow together musically in community. But in addition to hosting those things in person, you know, I think we really feel a calling to also stream those and make sure that they're available online to the wider church, just because of the fact that, like some of the comments you made, we've received so much positive and affirming feedback about that experience and about how it was life-giving and filling in a unique way. I have so many people who shared with me about how the World Church Advent service on December 12th and then the Center for Living Water kind of reflective musical service on the 19th were so different, but also so complementary, that they were such rich blessings in different ways. And so I think we feel a real calling to continue to offer that as widely as possible.
I think that is super, super important. And I'm really, really glad that that conversation has been continuing. Although I know it's hard to get things out there too online as well. It's a lot of work. I know it's a lot of work. You know, what I do want to say though, too, is that I think one thing that you're doing that's super important is showing us that different way to worship. Like the December 12th Advent service was a beautiful service, but it was a service that we're kind of used to and we feel comfortable with. A service that we might see on a Sunday morning, even though on a much broader, larger scale. And that was really cool. But what you offered on the 19th was a way to worship where it felt like a spiritual practice the whole way through. And I have sang Taizai songs with people before, and I'm not super like necessarily into singing that way, but almost every single time I have had a spiritual experience. So maybe I am into it and I just haven't admitted it to myself yet, because there is something really powerful that happens when you are singing together, when your voices go together over and over and over again. You feel the rhythm of other people. And I think as a community, it just brings something very special to the table. So I think it's really important that you're introducing or continuing to introduce that style of worship to the church.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that. And I'll just mention, to me, one of the other things that I think is really, really significant about that model of worshiping together in community. And I think if it were to be in person, there would be a wider element of sharing that's incorporated into that, you know, where this opportunity to reflect together and share about what we are experiencing, you know, would be part. And when you're live streaming, it's hard to incorporate that element. But just in terms of the music, thinking about traditional Taizai, but also thinking about, you know, some of the music that I have started writing, and I just think about my prior experience in mission centers and traveling to congregations, and there would be certain weeks where a congregation would say, gosh, we don't have anybody to play piano, we don't have anybody to lead music, you know, or we have a pianist, but they can't figure out these hymns, they're too complicated. And there's something about the simplicity of this music, you know, because I'm writing songs that are like four lines total, you know, they maybe have seven or eight chords in them. And it's like musical prayer is the description that comes to mind, that it's musical prayer. Like it's a form of coming together and singing and praying that almost has a campfire-esque feel to it, you know, where it feels, there's like that intimacy of like, we're gathering in small community and we're singing the songs of our heart. And it doesn't require a lot of practice. It doesn't require, you know, having a high caliber musician. Really, all it requires is vulnerability and desire and a willingness to come together. So I hope that kind of attitude can bless the church, that we can recognize that, you know, it doesn't always have to be a big production, that, you know, we don't always have to have the most incredible worship outline to have a meaningful experience together in community. Sometimes it is out of the simplicity and the vulnerability that the greatest spiritual insights emerge for us. So that's just something else that to me is significant to draw out of that style of gathering. And I hope that's something that can be meaningful for not only our local community here, but also the larger churches. I know many, many congregations and many communities that gather are really asking some big questions about what the future might look like.
Yeah, I appreciate that. And I know that that can be a scary time. So even spiritual practices are even more important in those scary times, if we just turn to them. So Daniel, you've talked a lot about what you're doing in your job right now and about the Center for Living Water and all of that, which is just really exciting to hear. What, maybe you've already answered this, but just in case you haven't, I want to give you a chance to. How do you see this developing into other avenues into the future? Do you have bigger plans, or are you thinking outside of that already, or are you still just trying to get stuff done that you know about?
Well, I like to think that within 24 months, we'll have taken over the temple, and I'm just kidding. Yeah, that's a really interesting question, and it could go in multiple directions, because I mean, I could think about avenues within the church, you know, avenues in the local community. But it's interesting for me to think about, you know, what does it look like in the future? And I have some of my own ideas, but one of the really interesting things about moving into a form of ministry with a posture of discernment, when you really try to commit yourself and your group of leadership to that, is that, you know, the future is such an unknown. And the more you try to predict and plan the future, I think the more you become out of step with some of the impulses of the Spirit. Because when you have your plans, and then there are the impulses of the Spirit, you know, sometimes they line up perfectly, and man, that's fantastic. That's never happened for me, though. But more often what happens is you have your big dreams and plans, and then the impulses of the Spirit collide with those things, and you have to make a choice of, oh my gosh, like, do I move forward with these plans, you know, and this vision that I have, even though there's a sense of conflict with how I sense God moving in my life and in the community, or do I turn away from my agenda, so to speak, and move more freely, to use the imagery of water with the center of living water, flow more freely into the current of God and the movement of the Spirit in our midst. And I think that for us, really what we're hoping to do with some of these smaller scale experiments, like, okay, we're going to host a community labyrinth walk, or we're going to bring a group together and have yoga, or we're going to lead this 6-week, you know, series doing spiritual practices and be really intentional about inviting people in the community who are not necessarily part of the existing church to see if there's a level of curiosity and resonance. And then allowing the response that we receive from the community, allowing some of those relationships that are formed in the conversations that emerge to really be informative to what our next steps will look like as something like the Center for Living Water continues to take shape. Because I think that I could write like a 5-year master plan and say, okay, in 5 years, we're going to have these 12 ministries, you know, and here's how often they'll happen. And here's, you know, how big those communities will be, we hope. And here's how it will then bless the rest of the church. But, you know, there's this real sense that I have, and I think part of it comes from being a pastor again and having all my stupid plans messed up all the time, where I just recognize that God doesn't work in that way. You know, God is a daily teacher, a daily partner, not somebody who will meet you in 5 years when you get to the finish line. And so, you know, I think that my greatest hope is that we continue to hold that posture, because the more we become formal, the more the Center for Living Water gains a sense of structure, the easier it's going to be to cling to the things that feel like they are familiar, and that feel like they are part of this identity that we are shaping for ourselves. But my hope is that we can continue to lean into some of the more disruptive invitations of the Spirit, and the way that that will challenge us to push ourselves beyond some of our initial expectations to become what it really is that God hopes we will become in this work.
Well, darn it, that's way harder than having a master plan.
Sometimes, yeah.
I mean, when I say, I mean, I'm being a little bit facetious, but that just means to me that you pretty much always have to be listening, pretty much always have to be paying attention, pretty much always have to be like, okay, you know, and I just picture myself taking a deep breath. Okay, God, if this is where you need me to go, let's try it. And having a master plan is just so much more comfortable. And I know God doesn't call us to be comfortable, unfortunately, even though we're always trying to be. So it does sound like to me, and you can correct me if I'm wrong for you, but for me, you know, like as a human being, I always work towards that comfort and try and step away from that disruption because it's not easy. But it sounds like to me that you are intentionally stepping into that disruption and allowing God to continually disrupt who you are and disrupt your life and disrupt your job, which is very cool and very scary to me.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I don't want to, it's interesting because it makes me sound like I'm so good at being attuned to the Spirit and open, but the reality is I haven't really had much of another choice because I'm part of this new form that didn't exist before. And there's some vision and shape to it, but it's nothing that has really been expressed. And as the pandemic continues to shift our world in these, you know, really significant ways, I haven't had a lot of options other than to pause as plans are disrupted and say, okay, you know, what is the next right faithful step? And I think to the credit of the church, I think a lot more people are doing that because all of our forms have been disrupted and all the plans we've had for the last 2 years have been changed. And I think everything that has occurred has been decided so much more quickly than normal. And there has been so much more opportunity to be responsive to the Spirit. I think there's been more opportunity to fail, which is a really great thing because it allows us to be more open and more humble and to embrace humility and really say, you know, this is not about me. This is not about my congregation necessarily even. It's about how God is calling us to embody the peace of Jesus Christ in all the work that we do and all the ministry that we feel ourselves called to. So I think that's an impulse that is, I feel, pulsing through the whole church right now. And it's challenging and disruptive, but I also think it's in many ways a tremendous gift.
I don't disagree at all. I think you're absolutely right. And it really has just taken ministry in some ways and just turned it 180 degree difference. And so as ministers, as members of priesthood or whatever, as members of a congregation or as friends of a congregation, there have been so many more ways that we can see God at work in people's lives, I think, during the pandemic, because I think we're looking, and maybe in the past, we didn't quite look as much as we have been looking in the last 2 years. So I completely agree. And I'm just saying that I would like to be as courageous as you are. I know it's not always easy, but as courageous as what you're talking about, because I do think that that is where God calls us. And that is where, when we're stepping out in faith, that's what we do. Yeah. So I appreciate that very much.
Yeah. Well, it's really, you know, and again, I reflect on my experience being a full-time pastor, and there were so many, I got so many accolades in that role. I mean, people really complimented me on things that transpired, on ministries that emerged, and I just reflect on that time, and I was like, so many of those things weren't my ideas. Like, I didn't intentionally Like, if you think about, if I think about where I started when I first stepped into the role of pastor, and where things kind of were when I was transitioning out, some of the progress we had made in terms of our connections in the community, you know, some of the more neighborhood focused ministries that we were offering, those were all things that were born from conversations, from unexpected relationships that were formed in the community. And again, I didn't have that master plan, and things just happened to unfold in a way that it felt like the Spirit was at work. And it made it feel like the congregation was in this really life-giving space. And people thought it was something that I had done. like, oh my gosh, you're just so good. And I'm like, well, I'm really, it's all of us, you know, it's all of us being willing to have this open and curious posture about what's happening around us. And it's a willingness to be experimental, to be in the moment, and to really take things day by day. I feel like I'm repeating myself, but I also think that some of the messages beneath the surface really are worth repeating. And none of this is about being, you know, the smartest person in the room, or the most creative person in the room, or the person who has the most incredible ideas or the most organizational skills. It's really just about the willingness to be open and to listen to yourself, to others, and to God. And that's a posture that I hope I can continue to carry. I do think that there's a level of courage that comes with that, but I think that's a courage that each person bears.
Amen. Thank you for that. So I was wondering, you talked about this being a field position, and a lot of people know what that means, you know, like the church is kind of broken up into these different fields. How does what you're doing benefit the field rather than just like, say, the temple?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I think what I would say, part of this is about, like I said earlier, creating some new expressions of ministry, new expressions of spiritual community, new ways to come together and hold this posture of contemplation and action that others in the church can see, and say, okay, maybe we could try something like that here. You know, maybe a small covenant community group, or maybe a Taizé worship experience is something that would give life in my community. But at the same time, it's not all about the specific ministries that happen. You know, I think sometimes we get on the popularity train of ministries in the church, where it's like, oh, well, this church did a food pantry, so we should do a food pantry over here, and then also here, and also here, and people hear a good idea, and even if it's totally severed from their context, they think they need to try it because they heard about it and think it's a good thing to do. And I think more so than, because the ministries of the center, as those take shape, you know, my hope is that they will be renewing and life-giving, and give people energy around this idea that something new can flow from the church, that isn't necessarily the existing forms that we have come to know. But more so than the specific ministries themselves, I think what I would feel really called to share with people is this process of discernment that I've had the opportunity to be a part of, where from really nothing other than a vision and a physical space and a group of leaders, we came together and said, what does it look like for us to engage together in spiritual practice, to reflect on scripture, to walk around the neighborhood, to really engage in paying attention to the holy impulses around us? And how do we take those practices and form them into some kind of process that leads us to be able to create an expression that feels like it is relevant, that it speaks to our context, and that it has a level of fluidity so that it can continue to evolve, emerge, and form around the things that we are experiencing together. And there's no exact science to that, but it's something that I think that, like being a pastor, this experience will also give me more tools that I can hopefully share with others in guest ministry settings, or even just in informal conversations with leaders who are really struggling to say, gosh, you know, how do I engage with my pastor leadership team in a new way? We feel like we're stuck in this rut. Or gosh, you know, I just moved to this new community and there's not a church presence here. And I really feel a desire to start something new. And I've met some people at work or at school, and they feel some of those same impulses. What does it look like for us to come together and form something? You know, what does it look like for us to engage together in a process that helps us to shape a new community? And I hope that the things that come from the Center for Living Water can help feel like there's a path forward when you find yourself in those situations, that that our little holy experiment here will be one among many that people can see across the church and say, okay, you know, there is a way for this to happen. You know, there are paths that we can take. There are processes and practices and disciplines and attitudes that we can share in together that will help us become more in tune with ourselves and each other and the Spirit and the community around us. So in that way, I really hope that this can be a blessing to the field. And that's always a question that that kind of is sitting in the back of my mind as I'm engaging in processes and the formation of new ministries. Because I think about not just how could this happen at the temple, you know, where we have a more robust system of resources. You know, we have some of the most gifted people in the church for doing things like streaming. But how might some of these things take shape in other places across the church? So that's a question that I'm always sitting with and wrestling with and trying to be faithful to as we move forward with some of the projects that we're pursuing.
That sounds pretty awesome. You know, when when you talk about, you know, helping out pastor leadership teams and things like that, of course you don't want to make the process too concrete because like we talked about before, God is always disrupting, but you know, just leading people down a certain path, a path they may never have thought before, thought about before, is incredibly refreshing and could be just like what was definitely needed just to kind of make people look at something in a new way. So that's really cool. That makes me really excited about this too.
I'm glad to hear it.
Well, Daniel, this has been an awesome podcast. I've really enjoyed talking to you about what your new role is. I mean, it's not really necessarily new anymore. You've been in it for a year, you said?
I have been in this role since May of 2021.
So less than a year. Newish role.
Newish. Yes, indeed.
Yes. And I really enjoy, you know, being reminded, and I'm not always reminded of this, being reminded by you regarding ways to look at God, because sometimes I feel like I put God in a box and I want God to stay in that box, and God is comfortable in that box, and God has never once been comfortable in a box. So you have reminded me not to do that and to allow God to continually disrupt what I'm doing all the time if possible. So I really appreciate that so much.
Yeah, I'm glad to hear that. And I appreciate that reflection. And you know, I think my greatest hope for our ministry and for the church is that, you know, we won't allow, you know, some of the really big, challenging, daunting questions to supersede our ability to continue being present to the Spirit. It's so easy to think about these milestones that we hope we will reach, you know, once the pandemic ends, you know, once we've met the Bridge of Hope liability and community of Christ, you know, once we're able to gather again, or, you know, once this person graduates college and moves back so we can make them our pastor, that those questions and things that that we carry around in the back of our minds don't keep us from being present to God's daily invitations in our lives. So that's a journey that I hope I can remain faithful to, and that I look forward to engaging in with everyone who claims a small piece of this really unique, silly, but exciting, loving little church that we're a part of.
Oh, for sure. Thank you so much, Daniel. This has been wonderful.
Well, you are wonderful. I'm so grateful for the work that you do and everyone at Project Zion to help share inspiring stories and reflections and just things that are happening across the church that we otherwise probably wouldn't have the opportunity to hear about. So kudos back to you all for the great work you do.
Aw, shucks. Bye, Daniel. Thanks again.
All right. See you, Carla.
Thanks for listening to Project Zion Podcast. Subscribe to our podcast on Apple Podcast, Stitcher, or whatever podcast streaming service you use, and while you are there, give us a 5-star rating. Project Zion Podcast is sponsored by Latter-day Seeker Ministries of Community of Christ. The views and opinions expressed in this episode are of those speaking and do not necessarily reflect the official policy or position of Latter-day Seeker Ministries or Community of Christ. The music has been graciously provided by Dave Hines.